It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Many Wisconsin counties have been providing long-term care to residents for a century or longer. And today, the state has the second most county-owned nursing homes in the country. But that might be changing. Despite the county facility's reputation for high-quality care, a slew of county boards proposed sales to for-profit buyers this year. They say their counties can't afford to keep the facilities running. But as Addie Costello reports, those sales could come at the cost of residents' care.
It's not hard for 86-year-old Arlene Meyer to stay busy.
People sit in here. Yeah.
Meyer sits in her room at Pinecrest, a county-owned nursing home in Merrill, where she reads off her monthly event calendar.
Now, this is only on Sunday. Trivia they have, which is enjoyable, makes the brain work.
Followed by a storytelling workshop, a sing-along, and...
Then on television, they're having Packers and Lions on Fox with popcorn.
On other days, there's chair Zumba, bingo, animal therapy, and even beer pong. The activities are her favorite thing about Pinecrest.
I love it here. I sincerely do.
But she worries that will change. The Lincoln County Board started looking for a for-profit buyer last year.
I was teed off about it. Now I think about it and think, you know, what jerks were running this?
Wisconsin has more county-owned nursing homes than most states. Experts say that's likely because Wisconsin residents and leaders prioritize keeping people closer to their homes. The state had 57 county-owned nursing homes in the late 70s. Today, there are 36. In Wisconsin and across the country, for-profit ownership has risen. Counties aren't required to run a nursing home. So during tough financial times, experts say facilities like Pinecrest often face sales. Lincoln County Board Chair Jesse Boyd says the county is working to get its expenses under control, but
right now we're drowning.
It's not just Lincoln County. This year, St. Croix County discussed a sale, Washington County's nursing home officially sold, Sauk County voted to sell, and Portage County leaders say they hope to find a buyer within a year. As Wisconsin's population ages, the state can't afford to lose nursing home beds, something Boyd recognizes.
We're just doing what we need to do to maintain a nursing home in Lincoln County.
These sales are happening right as increased Medicaid reimbursements could improve their financial picture. Renee Eastman is a vice president at Leading H Wisconsin.
If counties hung on for a little bit longer, they would really see the effects of that funding infusion and really how important these services are.
Federal Medicare data shows Wisconsin's county-owned facilities, on average, have higher quality of care and draw fewer complaints than facilities in the state owned by for-profits. And facilities like Pinecrest that offer workers county benefits tend to be better staffed, with less turnover.
We own it. It's our place. We all take pride in it being here, and we feel like it's important to a community.
That's Dora Gorski. Her late husband, Ken, moved into Pinecrest when he had advanced dementia. It meant a lot to her that many staff and residents already knew him from Aikido classes he taught or his time working in healthcare.
This is full of neighbors and friends and people from our community, people who love us and know us.
Something she says you don't find in a big city.
And you don't find that in a private for-profit nursing home. You find it in a county-owned, community-run nursing home.
With the majority of Lincoln County board members currently in favor of selling and interested buyers lined up, Pinecrest isn't likely to stay county-owned for long, something Gorski and organizers across the state plan to keep fighting. Addie Costello, Wisconsin Public Radio.
This piece was produced in partnership with the nonprofit Wisconsin Watch. This is Wisconsin Today. After losing both the race for president and control of the U.S. Senate in the November election, the Democratic National Committee will be electing a new chairperson on February 1st. One of the candidates hoping to lead the national party is Ben Wickler, chair of the Wisconsin Democrats since 2018. Yesterday, now Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer endorsed Wickler for the role, saying he was, quote, a tenacious organizer and a proven fundraiser. Before Schumer's endorsement, we caught up with Ben Wickler to discuss how his experience organizing campaigns in Wisconsin could carry over to the national stage. He talked with Rob Ferret just before the holidays. Here's a listen.
All right, big turning point here in some ways for the Democratic Party, looking for this new national leadership. Why you? Why now?
Well, this is a moment when the whole country faces a version of what we saw in Wisconsin. We have Trump and his kind of Mar-a-Lago billionaire cabinet coming into power. They're pretty clear that they want to rig this whole country for the benefit of a tiny number of the richest people in the world at the very top, at the expense of everyone else. And it reminds me of what we saw with Scott Walker coming in and smashing unions and going after voting rights and gerrymandering our state to try to rig Wisconsin for the benefit of the very few at the expense of the many. And I think we need to fight back. We need to have a national party that can organize in the fight for working people in every state across this country with the same kind of intensity and focus that we've been able to bring to the work in Wisconsin, especially over these last few years, building on you know, years of work before that. So I'm running for DNC chair to unite our party to fight up and down the ballot with a strategy for every state that changes how we organize and communicate so we're present year-round in all the places people get their news and information and in their own communities and their lives, and win a ton more elections at every level of the ballot so we can contain the damage but also build a path to actually being able to win elections and deliver for working folks, no matter where they live or what they look like across the country.
What do you see in particular you could take from Wisconsin and bring to the national stage and help apply in other states as well?
In Wisconsin, we build an integrated campaign that operates year-round and works at every level. And what I mean by that is we work on mayor's races and city council races and school board races. We fought in state Supreme Court races, and that led to a state Supreme Court that actually read our Constitution and struck down the gerrymander. And this year, we flipped 14 state legislative seats at the same time as, you know, there was a national red wave. We added votes for Democrats statewide, and Trump did win because he added even more. But Tammy Baldwin won because a lot of those Trump voters only voted for Trump. When we turn folks out, we're asking them to vote for Democrats at every level of the ballot. And if you compare that to, let's say, North Carolina, a few years ago, Republicans invested, they flipped their state Supreme Court majority. The Supreme Court there re-rigged North Carolina. Democrats lost 3 U.S. House seats, and now Republicans have a House majority nationwide because Republicans focused on those down ballot races. And I want to support state parties all across the country fighting up and down the ballot in ways that can have enormous consequences for the whole country. This is not just about showing up every 4 years. It's about a permanent campaign. And I think we've shown that in Wisconsin. Right now, we have our state Supreme Court race this spring, Susan Crawford versus Brad Schimmel. That is a must-win race. And we're going to fight to win that. And we should be doing the same thing in every state around the country.
On a technical level, the Association of State Democratic Chairs has proposed that the national party redistribute 50% of fundraising to state operations. You support that, I understand. What would that mean?
I have a different view about how we pursue the goal to expand the pie for every state. It's not coming in with a fixed percentage off the top. It's building a plan based on the fights that are going to happen and finding the resources to win those fights. That will mean more resources going to states, but it's not coming in with a one-size-fits-all cookie cutter. You know, Wisconsin is the only state with a giant fight on April 1st that is existential, the Supreme Court majority, and we're going to need a ton of resources to make sure Susan Crawford beats Brad Schimmel and we don't get rigged the way North Carolina did. So this spring, it's not 50-50. Wisconsin has to be a front and center in this battle. And then this fall, we've got New Jersey and Virginia, and they have critical elections in those states. And meanwhile, in tons of states, there are local elections and special elections. Let's build a battle plan that is fit to purpose around these fights and take every level of the ballot seriously. And that way, Wisconsin will have a Supreme Court majority that believes in freedom and democracy and will be winning local fights across the country. That's my approach to this is it starts with the fight and the plan to win. That's how I think we raise more resources, and that's how we get more resources into the states.
After the 2024 elections, I've seen kind of two stories from some Democrats. One is panic, lost the White House. Republicans now control both chambers or will control both chambers of Congress in January. It's a huge loss. Radical change is needed. On the other hand, people saying narrow popular vote majority for Donald Trump, narrow majority for Republicans in Congress, Senate. It was a tough map. The pendulum is just going to swing back, maybe even naturally. Where do you fit in?
I have a hybrid view, which is that we did almost win, and the pendulum is likely to swing our way, and we should be shooting more, but for more than to win by a hair's breadth based on political momentum. The views of Democrats that we should have a country that works for working people, that every person deserves freedom and dignity and opportunity and respect, those views are wildly popular. And the goal should be to win by a lot more than 1%. We should be winning in a lot of places that look red on the map right now. If we can communicate and fight and organize everywhere, and if we do work like with the work we're going to do in our Supreme Court race this spring, we have a path, I think, to having a significant majority, to having a federal trifecta and Democratic leadership in a ton more states in a way that we can build over these next 4 years. So I do think we shouldn't overestimate the strength of the Republicans, but we also shouldn't underestimate how strong Democrats can be if we can actually get our message out and show up for people and demonstrate that who we're fighting for, which is the vast majority of this country, and who the other side is for, which is a tiny group trying to rig the whole system for the benefit of a tiny handful of people at the top.
You mentioned working people, and that seems to be one of the biggest challenges for Democrats right now. Republicans making gains with working people or non-college educated voters. There are different proxies for that. Not just white working class voters, but some moves toward Republicans among Black and Hispanic working class voters. How do you turn that around? Is it a messaging issue? What do you think Democrats need to do?
First, I want to agree. When I say working folks, it's white, Black, Latino, Asian American, Pacific Islanders, Native American. Most Americans, they work for a living. They don't have a bunch of assets, stock market portfolios that are growing in value that they can live off of. This is a predominantly working class country. And I think we got to fight for folks in a way that they can see and touch and feel. And next year, we know Trump is going to try to pass a tax cut for the wealthiest people in the world at the expense of the middle class. It's something he did when he was president last time. We need to fight in a way that shows folks that we're on their side, that we're the ones who are going to try to make sure that they can afford the medicine they need and be able to see a doctor without sacrificing the food that their family needs to eat or their chance to have a roof over their head. We're the party that for generations has fought for working folks to be able to form a union and organize and collectively bargain in their workplaces, and for things like Social Security that have provided a floor for folks so you don't have to live out your final days in poverty. This is stuff that affects folks in every community across the country. And Republicans try to always divide and distract and try to pull people's attention away from these central economic questions about who our country and our economy should work for. So when you look at how we lost in 2024, we lost by 16 percentage points among people who never pay attention to political news. And we won by 8 points among people who pay attention all the time. It's not that people who heard our message rejected it. It's that we didn't reach a ton of people with our message. And we have to clarify that message. We have to make sure we're using language that people actually use in real life, not just what feels like a political ad. But then we have to get out and speak to folks who are not tuning in to the political news cycle, find it all stressful, think both parties are full of it. We have to be present in the places and the conversations where they're making sense of the world and showing that we're on their side and making clear when the other side is trying to pull the wool over their eyes and rip them off. And if we can do that, I think we have a chance to win big up and down the ballot.
How do you do that?
It goes across the country. Well, to start with, look at where young people get their news. And this is, again, across race and ethnicity. They do not listen to traditional radio very much. They don't read newspapers like ever. They don't watch cable news. They're on YouTube and streaming platforms and TikTok and vertical video and long form podcasts and Discord channels and giant chat rooms. And Republicans are actually investing in making sure that folks carry their message in those places. We need to do that as Democrats. We need to show up where people's, their eyeballs and their attention and where their AirPods are actually taking them. And that means building a kind of war room that is built for the 21st century and not just for the 20th century, at lifting up a whole new generation of communicators, making sure that every day we're driving it home in ways that connect to the broad argument that we're on the side of working folks in this country, and then choosing the fights that people will really remember. The way that we fought against the repeal of the Affordable Care Act in 2018, young people under 26 who were going to lose their health insurance, their ability to stay on their parents' health insurance if Republicans succeeded, they got energized. They got energized in youth participation in elections. And most young people are working class folks. It shot up. And I think we're going to have fights like that going forward. So it's how and where we communicate, who's doing the communicating, messengers that can speak directly to the impact that these things have on their lives and be clear about who's on their side and who's not. And then the fights that we fight, the fights we pick that show our values and show the other side's values. That is how you break through, is because people remember who's on their side when the chips are down. And we know that Trump is going to try to do a million terrible things. We have the chance now to choose the biggest fights to put front and center in the American consciousness that demonstrate our values as Democrats.
One of the biggest shifts in American politics, the decline of conservative Democrats and even some moderate Democrats in places around the country. You had somebody like Joe Manchin, a Democrat who could win in West Virginia, reviled by many people in the liberal part of the party. Do you see room for more moderate or even conservative-ish Democrats to win states like West Virginia or, Western states?
We're a Big Ten party, and, different Democrats disagree about all kinds of things. And, if you look at, the campaigns that Democrats were running in a state like Montana, it was quite different from the campaigns that Democrats were running in a state like New York. There are certain core values that make us Democrats. And, we're going to always fight for those values. And also, we recognize that a lot of people will disagree on a lot of things. I also think we're in a moment where the right has become so extreme that just believing that, that people should have the right to make their own decisions about their own body puts you outside of the Democratic, puts you outside of the Republican Party's tent. They are running purity tests and litmus tests and kiss the Donald Trump's ring tests all the time. And I think that we're the party that says, look, if you want to make a country that works for everyone, where everyone has these basic freedoms and respect, then join the big Democratic coalition and fight with us to make this work. And that message, I think, is going to have a lot of resonance in a lot of places where people may have voted for Trump just because they were fed up and frustrated. The price of eggs was high and they weren't paying a lot of attention to the actual policies that Trump wants to inflict on this country. Those policies are deeply, deeply unpopular. And I think we have a chance to make a real case that we represent something better and that through our actions, we're going to demonstrate our values that we're going to fight for folks.
As we wrap up, we've been mostly looking toward the future, a brief look back. Did Democrats make a mistake in just rubber stamping Joe Biden's reelection campaign and then when he stepped down going right to Kamala Harris without any kind of mini primary or anything like that?
Well, the DNC chair can sometimes affect the future, and that is certainly my goal, but they can't really affect the past. And so my goal in the DNC chair's race is to bring together folks who might have disagreed on a lot of things over the last year and even the last several years and unite us around a vision about how we unite and fight and win up and down the ballot. We are where we are in this moment. And my message to folks who often were in heated disagreement, a few months ago about questions like this is, let's come together around what we can do together now, because the fight is upon us. No matter where folks were, yesterday, tomorrow, we're going to have to decide who we are as a party and whether we're ready for the fight. And that starts, running for DNC chair, the election's February 1st, then April 1st, Susan Crawford versus Brad Schimmel, and then on to the races across the country that are coming throughout this year. This is a moment when we're all going to be called on to live out our values and elect folks who share those values to make sure that this whole country doesn't get rigged and the American experiment doesn't fall under a profound shadow for years to come.
Ben, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me on.
That is Ben Wickler, who chairs the Democratic Party of Wisconsin and is one of the candidates for chair of the Democratic National Committee. The group chooses its new leader on February 1st, and he talked with Rob Ferret.